right, everyone. Good evening. Thank you for joining us for this public outreach meeting regarding community development block grant disaster recovery dollars. My name is Maziar Movasagi. I'm from the State Housing Community Development Department, and I'm here with my team, Sue, Ted, Nathan, who's out there, Christina, and Mr. Bob Troy from FEMA is also joining us. I also wanted to thank the Mendocino County team and Darcy for both publicizing this event and providing this room, so thank you very much. Before I get started, just so I know who's in the audience, I wanted to get an idea. Do we have any homeowners or renters that were impacted by the fires in 2017? Okay. And are there representatives from the development community, nonprofit community here as well? No, and we got our Mendocino County partners and...
Assemblymember Blitz.
Okay.
I'm with the River Valley Municipal Advisory Council.
Excellent. So we're in two hats.
And I'm with the Senator Mike McGuire's office.
Excellent.
I'm with the Redwood Valley Rancheria.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you for coming.
Any other tribes in the room?
Okay. So without further ado, I believe this is the clicker. All right.
The mouse works.
Thank you. So today we're going to have an overview of what these CDBGDR, Community Development Block Grant, Disaster Recovery Dollars are. We're going to talk about what disasters are covered by these dollars, because not all disasters, specific ones, are only covered. And then, very importantly, we're going to spend a good bulk of the meeting today talking about the action plan the State of California is proposing to implement this program and respond to the unmet recovery needs from the disasters in 2017. All right, so goals and objectives for today. We want to make sure you get a good understanding of CDBG-DR requirements. Even if you've worked with CDBG before, DR requirements are different. Provide a detailed understanding of what areas are covered or what areas are not covered. From the time this appropriation was announced, there were other disasters in this area, so we want to make sure we communicate those. And like I said, a bulk of today's discussion is going to be the action plan timeline, and what's proposed in the action plan. So who are we, the team from HCD? So Housing Community Development Department is a statewide department. We provide grants and loans for a variety of affordable housing community development projects. We also are responsible for mobile home registration and titling. We also have a policy research division that is involved with housing policy statewide. So we're involved in virtually every asset of housing and community development all over the state. So an overview of the funding and the disasters. These are some of the key points of the CDBG-DR requirement. First and foremost, what we're talking about here today is $124 million provided to California to deal with unmet recovery needs from the disasters. In the same appropriation, there was an $88 million for mitigation purposes. That pot of money is going to have its own action plan. It's going to have its own rules. The Federal Register that established these rules hasn't been published yet, so we're going to be coming around at a later time talking about the mitigation. But today we're talking about the $124 million available for unmet recovery needs that must be primarily used to address housing. 70% of these funds must be spent in a way that benefits low, moderate income individuals and households. Now for folks, I'm going to show a chart about how that number is calculated and give you an example of what that number is in the area, so you get an idea of what the target population for these dollars are. When HUD allocated this money to California, they also identified most impacted and distressed areas. 80% of this $124 million must be spent in those most impacted and distressed areas. The remaining 20% can be spent in the 80% or the other geographies we're going to cover again. Very importantly, these funds can only be used to address projects that have specific tiebacks to the disaster. These funds can't be used to address other issues that were going on at the time of the disasters. They're intended to address unmet recovery needs from the disasters in question. And at the federal level, we have to ensure that there is no duplication of benefits. So, and we're gonna give you a sample calculation, but the idea is that these CDBG-DR dollars cannot replace existing resources that are available to address. They're really intended to go for unmet recovery needs. All right, so I've been talking about this $124 million. It's not like HUD gave California $124 million, $124 million is sitting in our bank account. In order for California to access that money, we have to produce an action plan. And that's what the bulk of the discussion today. The action plan is a very data-driven document that does a deep data analysis to identify what the unmet recovery need is, and then includes a series of programs to respond to those unmet recovery needs. And we're going to be covering those details later. HUD reviews, and when HUD reviews and approves this plan, then a grant agreement is executed between California and HUD, and then we start having access to those dollars and we really get to the bulk of the work. But until the action plan is reviewed and approved by HUD, we don't have access to this $124 million. All right, before I cover this map, I have to say, you know, it's not lost on the HCD team that this area has experienced multiple disasters. We're dealing with the most horrific disaster from housing and loss of life purposes. So our hearts are heavy talking about these. And we don't want to seem flippant when we mention numbers, but it's very important to know what disasters are covered with these dollars and which ones aren't. So very importantly, these funds go for federal disaster declarations 4344. That's in this area, and specifically for the Mendocino Lake area. It covers the Redwood Valley and the Sulphur Fire in Lake County. Just as an example, it also covers the Tubbs fires in the Santa Rosa area. And next slide. This is also the wind complex. This is north of Sacramento area. This is Marysville, Oroville area. In addition to the 4344 Northern California disasters, these funds also cover Southern California disasters as well. The major Thomas Fire and the debris flows in the Santa Barbara area, including some of the smaller ones in San Diego County and in Los Angeles County as well. So this is a map that shows the total sum of areas covered by these DR dollars. So residents and businesses that are identified in the color-coded regions in this area are eligible for these DR dollars for unmet recovery needs. As I mentioned, when HUD allocated this money to California, they identified areas that were most impacted and distressed. That's the area where 80% of this $124 million must be spent. Those most impacted and distressed areas are the counties of Sonoma and Ventura and five specific zip codes, one of which is in Mendocino, and then one in predominantly Yupa, one in Napa, one in Clear Lake, and one in the Montecito area down south. What's really important to see in this map is that from a statewide perspective, we're dealing with multiple disasters in multiple geographies. So as we're developing an action plan to implement these DR dollars, we need to take account of the balance of these geographies and disasters across the state and across all communities. All right, you heard me mention that 70% of these funds must be spent in a way that benefit low, moderate income individuals. So the question comes up, how do you calculate, or how do you identify low, moderate individuals and households? That's calculated through a methodology by HUD where they take a geographic area, identify a median income, the 50% point of that income, and then 80% of that 50% becomes low, moderate. So anyone below that number is a low, moderate individual. So as an example, in Mendocino County, for a family of four, if they're making an annual income of $48,500, they're considered low moderate income. So anything at that and below is the target population for these dollars. If you look at just the family of four concept, these are the different counties that are covered by these disaster dollars. You see that there's a pretty big wide range in here as well. So multiple geographies, multiple areas. Could I ask you to
hold? Yeah, it's about the map beforehand, so I'll leave.
Okay, I'll come back to it. Yeah.
Redwood Valley was a very small piece of it, and it had like one little stripe through it. Did that mean it was the best?
The entire zip code.
The entire zip code.
For Redwood Valley is the most impacted and distressed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, thank you.
You have a map, you got a handout, it's on the side of one of the maps handouts that you were given at the front table.
Okay. So that doesn't include Potter Valley or Willits.
Yeah. Okay, so that little area that's right there that is...
That's the full zip code of Redwood Valley.
It's Redwood Valley.
Yes.
That little spot with the line. Okay, thank you.
All next slide.
All right.
All right, so I'm gonna turn over the floor to Sue. Sue's gonna walk you through the action plan, and then I'm gonna come back and talk about the timeline for the action plan implementation.
So, as Maziar said, we're pulling an action plan together that we will submit to HUD by December 18th. This is the draft. We are here for public comment on this draft. The unmet recovery needs is the basis of what we've got to submit to HUD. They used a certain data set to award us funding, and now they want us to document what is actually happening, what actually the unmet recovery need is, which is the needs remaining after funding is applied that exists already. So this is an overview of the unmet recovery needs. This is using HUD's data, which is predominantly FEMA individual assistance data and SBA data. You can see using this FEMA data, just the housing column is more than our $124 million that we've got. We're at almost $186 million for unmet recovery need for housing. Then we've got the infrastructure numbers. Economic development and agriculture, you'll see, these numbers are also really large. They're asterisked because, as we said in the round one meetings, that the Federal Register notice for this funding says that we need to address housing and housing-related issues first. Because we only have $124 million, the state is prioritizing essentially roofs and infrastructure that serve those houses as their main priorities with this funding at this point. So we're looking at housing and housing-related infrastructure, such as utilities, water storage, things like that. So these, for economics, economic agriculture, and some other things, we're not allocating funding to those two issues yet, but they are our placeholders in the action plan so that as we get boots on the ground and really find out what demand is for certain activities and for certain programs, if needed, we can move money around. And we're letting HUD know that we absolutely have unmet recovery needs and we don't have enough money to address them all. This is the alternative unmet recovery needs. So, as I said, FEMA data, super helpful, but it's only people that registered. And we know that not everybody registers for FEMA. So this data uses CAL FIRE data that actually rolls into address by address. They do an assessment of every property about whether, how much it was damaged, what type of property it was. It is more robust and sort of more complete because it includes people who didn't register for FEMA. When we use this CAL FIRE data and the SBA data, we're at $1.7 billion in housing unmet recovery need. So there's a big swing in this. And the same with infrastructure. The total unmet recovery need with these numbers is $2.5 billion. This is, we know, much more accurate than the other numbers. But FEMA, HUD can only, when they allocate the original amount, they can only use what data is available. So it's a start, and HUD knows it's a start. So these numbers are in the action plan. We are talking to HUD about alternative methods of calculating unmet recovery need, and this is a conversation for trying to push for future allocations as well. So the proposed recovery plans, we talked about it in the round one meetings as well. We've got two housing programs. We're looking at an owner-occupied reconstruction rehabilitation program. We're allocating $48 million to that. We are holding placeholders for small rental and possibly reimbursement. We're going to be talking about a survey to get that information. We'll talk about the survey in a bit. But the owner-occupied housing programs, these programs are slated to be operated at the state level. It's a really high, intensive, labor-intensive program to really make sure that homeowners get from application through permitting and the environmental stuff and through to close out with contractors and all that stuff. So case managers will be assigned when someone applies for the owner-occupied and really make sure that the homeowner has help getting through this process. We know federal funding is wonderful, not exactly easy all the time.
Then we've got multifamily funding. We've got $67 million allocated for that, for the rehab and reconstruction and new construction of multifamily units. This is how we can best help at this point renters, because we know that there's just not enough places to live. So the multifamily piece is going to be run at the local level. However, we will, the state's not going to approve projects. We're not going to choose who gets funded. Ultimately, when we can make the money available, this will be a locally run program. So the jurisdictions, the counties and cities, will decide what they send to us. We'll check them for compliance, and we'll check them for eligibility. And then the local jurisdictions will determine which multifamily projects move forward. And then we would do a contract with the counties and cities, and they're the ones who would then run this money. Same situation with infrastructure. As I said, infrastructure for housing, again, we're talking utilities, and we're talking mostly public utility projects and water projects. So right now we are proposing, we're gonna do fund a match for FEMA public assistance programs or projects that have been approved by FEMA. As you may or may not know, at the county level and local level, there is a match requirement. When FEMA puts in money, the local jurisdiction's got to put in money to match it, and that gets really expensive. So we can use that. We can use this money to help the local jurisdictions pay to get this funding done in the categories for public utilities that we're looking at right now. The number in the pipelines, we can look at FEMA's pipeline, what's been approved, and for the jurisdictions that are eligible for this funding, we're at about $3.5 million for those projects. And again, this is we'd award this money down to at the local level, and they would administer it out in order to get their match requirements taken care of. So, as I mentioned in the owner-occupied program, HCD is going to manage it. It's going to be owner-occupied. We're going to provide max gap financing up to $150,000 per unit for a single property. This number was essentially, what does it cost if somebody needs to buy a new mobile home? Because you don't reconstruct a mobile home, right? You buy a new one. And we've had a lot of mobile homes lost and damaged in these fires. So this number, it's, you know, federal money's not going to pay for fancy stuff, but this is going to get you back into a nice unit, permanent foundation, hooked up, ready to roll. Assistance will be provided as a grant. The owner-occupied program is going to be a grant. It is not going to be a loan. More debt is sort of the last thing a homeowner needs after disasters. Surveys will be conducted prior to the application period to assess and prioritize. We'll get more into the survey in a few slides, but this is a critical piece. And then, as I said, an applicant's going to be assigned a case manager to help you walk through the maze that is this kind of funding and check all the boxes and make sure that we get everything done that needs done. So this is the prioritization. Because this funding is, as Maziar said, is intended to help low and mod income folks, the way that we are proposing this program is to award in a tiering fashion. So we would open up in the survey, and then in the application period, people we'd take a whole application period, we'd get all the applications in at once, and then we would tier them based on. Tier one would be in the most impacted and counties and zips, which includes Redwood Valley. And that. So this is where Maziar said it's the most impacted distress, where you have to spend 80% of your money. So tier one is it's in one of those areas, and it's a low mod family. Tier two would be all of the disaster areas and low mod. From there, tier three is in the most impacted distressed, all incomes. And then tier four is all areas in the disaster and all incomes. So the key here also to understand is that in each tier, any applicant that identifies as having a family member or household member that is disabled or has access and functional needs, they rise to the top of whatever tier they qualify for on this, so that we make sure that most vulnerable populations are being addressed. Oops, I skipped one. Sorry. There we go. Survey. So this is the timeline of of how the owner-occupied program and the survey would roll out. HCD, December 18th, we submit our action plan. In a perfect world, February 1st, we get action plan approved by HUD. We then really launch the survey out to all potential applicants up and down the state for this funding. We get the results back. It allows us to then roll through final program design based on what we think demand is, because we can calculate need all day, but we don't know who's really gonna apply, right? So that's demand. We need to understand the demand so that we can really tailor the program to what we're seeing the needs are. If we need to amend the action plan, then we go into that, and then we launch the program. So the as we said with the survey, this information is going to be used to refine the allocations, prioritization criteria, and workflows, final design of the program. Any project receiving CDBG-DR funds has to meet with NEPA compliance. So the reason we're doing a survey is that we will gather from potential applicants as much information as we can, but it's not an application. The minute you submit an application for federal funding, and we'll get into a little more detail about this, we have to issue what's called a stop work order so that environmental certification can be done. It sounds onerous. It's not, provided you make sure all the steps are done. That's where the case manager comes in. They help go through that, and with most cases, it is, you know, a week process at the most, hopefully a few days. It's not as terrible as it sounds. And then based on outcomes of the survey and all that, then we would be able to make the adjustments and get the program launched. So as we said, the stop order, it really gives everybody the jitters, and it's understandable. But the use of a survey allows us to people to keep working on their homes without having to submit an application yet. And then we really can sort out who's ultimately likely to be eligible for the program, and we know what the tiering and the demand is without making people stop work on their homes. And then we go back out with the application period. We submittal of the application, we have to do the review process, which means they've got to stop work. Where are you today in your project if you're rebuilding already? We said, as I said, in most cases, environmental review will be completed during the damage assessment, because we'd have to have a case manager come out, do the damage assessment, confirm the bids and things like that, and likely they can complete the environmental paperwork at that time, so we don't expect it to really cause exorbitant delays. And then once the environmental is reviewed and completed, the funds can be committed to the project and work starts right back up again. Who should complete the survey? Everybody who had a home that was damaged, not just destroyed, but damaged or destroyed in one of these disasters. Everybody who had one of these, regardless of income, regardless of how much damage, little, lot, whatever. And whether you've completed your construction or not, please fill out the survey. All households with ranges of income will be eligible. It just depends on, as you saw, we've got $48 million. How much of that goes to, you know, in those first two tiers to the low mod, and then anything beyond that goes to other incomes. Who's eligible? Somebody who owned a property at the time of the disaster, and that property, that home, was damaged or destroyed in 4344 or 4353. Everybody. So when Maziar was talking about duplication of benefit, this is an example of what we would have to go through for, this is a general example of what we would have to go through. So let's say that your cost to rebuild or repair is $200,000. You've got $100,000 from your insurance company to rebuild, not personal property. This is building, this is reconstruction of your property. And FEMA gave you $15,000. That means your total award from CDBG is up to $85,000. This is interesting. There is, with SBA right now, we would have to, if you had an SBA loan in here for $10,000, even if you didn't take it, right now, we'd have to pull out the full $10,000 because you have access to it. So then this becomes $75,000. They have passed new statutes in Congress, and in fact, our friend Bob helped work on all of this stuff, that there is, they're not going to make us do that anymore. They're going to change the way we calculate that. The department has a conversation with HUD tomorrow. We will be bringing this up with them. We understand from our consultants and other consultants that HUD may be looking to fix this wholesale. If they don't, we will certainly request a waiver to be able to do this and do the smaller SBA calculation in where we only back out the funding that has been received. So the multifamily housing program, again, is really for our friends at the county level. It provides gap financing on larger scale developments. CDBGDR funding would be limited to the affordable units, because obviously this funding, we need to create affordable units. That isn't to say that there can't be market rate units in the building. Of course there can, but we're going to support the affordable units. We will make the funding available to the local governments, and we will, rather than doing a project maximum, we're doing like a home program is another federal program, and they have subsidy limits, a limit on the amount per unit that can be spent. So I think right now it's a little under $300,000 per unit for affordable units. So we're gonna set it at that. We don't have a project maximum. We simply have an amount that we'll get into in a minute that is proportionate to the amount of units lost in renter data in each county and city. But a jurisdiction could put all of their multifamily money into one project if they wanted to, or they could split it out between projects. So these are the proposed allocations for the multifamily funding. And again, this is based proportionally on the percentage of rental damage, renters and damage that we've got documentation for in each jurisdiction that's eligible for the funding. So for Mendocino, you can see total funding here, $6.5 million and change is what they're available for up to for the multifamily. There is funding to the most impacted distressed is 6.2. So the difference between those can be spent in the 20% area of the county rather than just in Redwood Valley. So it's the entire county, right? Just double checking myself, which means because the entire county is the declaration, but the most impacted is the, right? So you could spend money in Ukiah if you needed to put new units in. You could spend money in Willits if you needed to put more money in. So that this becomes pretty flexible with where you can build units. We do only have 6 years to spend this money. So we are certainly recommending that we get projects, that the jurisdictions get their pipeline full of projects and be sure to send us projects that are as shovel ready as possible so that we can really move the projects along and keep the money rolling and get it spent. So public assistance, I pretty much went through this already, that again, it's public utilities damaged by the fire, and then we will be funding local governments to help with their cost share because it is a very large burden on the local government budgets. So right now, these are the PA match allocations. FEMA is always approving new projects. It takes a while to get some of these in the pipeline and get them approved. So we'll check these numbers before this final version goes to HUD December 18th. Right now, this is what we know. And so Mendocino County's match for Category D and Category F, those are the two that are basically utilities for houses and water projects for homes, is at $18,770. But if there's more money that comes up into the pipeline for approved projects, then these numbers will change. I talked earlier about placeholders. We don't have current funding applied to these, but some of the information on these will come out of the survey for the owner-occupied program. Again, reimbursement could be eligible for someone who's completed their home building. However, it's basically costs incurred and expended within the first year of the disaster. So that's part, that's what's eligible for reimbursement. And then small rental repair, which is essentially rebuild and repair, which is 1 to 4 units. So a duplex, a triplex, a fourplex. And then this one gets more complicated when you're trying to, when you're giving this money to landlords for rentals, because we would then need to make sure that those rental units are affordable units. So we're not sure what the demand for that would be, because some landlords may not want to require affordability periods, but this funding requires on rental units that there is affordability period that is monitored. And then, as we said, the economic development program, workforce development, and small business recovery programs are what we're seeing the need for. We know it's a need. It's part of the ask for more money down the line. But these are placeholders in there so that if funding becomes available or if demand is such that we've got money we can move around, these are the kinds of things that we can consider, provided that the survey for these two shows there's demand for these two. We know that there would be demand for economic development. So the grant allocation summary after administration costs, so everybody can run programs, we've got basically $117 million, almost $118 million to go to program allocations. Housing programs, as we said, the owner-occupied, just about $48 million. Multifamily, just about $67 million. And the FEMA PA is $35. That brings us down to the $124, $155. That's the math and the breakout. And this presentation will be up on HCD's website on, I think, next Friday. We'll get it posted. All right. So Mazar's back up, the timeline and next steps.
All right, thank you, Sue. So I'm going to review the timeline of the action plan document that captures this information that Sue shared with you about the different programs. So this is the key timeline for the action plan we're in right now. We're in this middle of the process. In April, California was allocated the money. We had a couple rounds of meetings. But where we are in is the public meeting for the public comment period for the action plan, which is going to run through December 12th. By December 18th, HCD is required to submit the action plan to HUD for review and approval. This is the Federal Register notice. This is a timeline that we must comply with. HUD has 45 days to review and approve the action plan we submit. So we anticipate potentially by February 1st, we will have HUD's approval. And after that, we will execute the grant lien agreement, which starts giving us access to the dollars to actually get the work done. Next slide, please. So this action plan document, this is not a one-time document. It's a document that gets edited and revised as we move forward with implementation of these DR dollars. As Sue was mentioning, there are different survey elements, different data gathering for us to see what's going on. Is the money being spent? Where is the demand? So we do anticipate that over the 5-6 year period of this program that we will be advising the action plan a number of times. From other states that have done this a lot more than us, the Floridas and the Texas of the world, we hear that they're way past a dozen amendments to their action plan. So this will be a living, breathing document that will get revised a lot. One of the key components I wanted to touch base to is that there's two different types of amendments to the action plan, substantial and non-substantial. The reason we put the placeholders for economic development and other programs is that if you have a placeholder but you haven't allocated specific dollars to, if you want to allocate dollars to at a later time, that's a non-substantial amendment. It's a quicker review process, whereas if we wanted to add something brand new to the action plan that we're not discussing here today, that would be considered a substantial amendment and it would have to go through a full review and approval process from HUD, so that will take some time. This is the best case scenario of the timeline of where we're going to go to beyond the timeline graph I shared. So in February, we anticipate, again, best case scenario, HUD's going to review and approve the plan. So therefore, sometime in February, March, we're going to execute the grant lien agreement, again, getting access to the dollars. The survey will be launched sometime in March or April to start gathering the data. By April or May, we will actually launch the owner-occupied program. based on the data that comes in from this survey. So in all likelihood, the best case scenario is that initial awards to homeowners will be made sometime in the summer of 2019. So how can you stay in touch with us? Because, you know, you're going to be interested in how we're going to amend the action plan and what's happening. The best way to sign up and give us your email so we can communicate information about meetings to you. Comments to the action plan must be submitted to us in writing. So give me a sample card. Sample card over here. Thank you.
Yep.
If you want us to respond, if you have an official comment, you need to fill out this form and give it to us. We will have a question and answer period to provide responses, but those are not official responses. So you're either going to have to use that form, or you're going to have to go to the state, to our website, to see the action plan, review it, and then provide comments. The place you provide your comments is disasterrecovery@hcd.ca.gov, and public comments will be accepted until midnight December 12th. And we really welcome your input and comment on this, because as we said, we need to know what's happening on the ground in order to be able to ensure that these dollars are spent.
And that disaster recovery email address is not a black hole. It actually comes directly to me. So you email there, you'll reach me.
All right, that is the end of our presentation. Like I said, we're available for question and answers about what's being covered, but if you want to give us a comment, you have to give this to us in writing, and if you can get it done, you can hand it to any one of us or Christina on the back table as well.